Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980, and it is time for our pick six at six.
Best Commander Storylines.
It is caught!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the pick six at six.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level, build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
Today, a Wednesday that feels like a Thursday because, well, the coordinators talked. I have to keep reminding myself, no, today is actually Wednesday, even though we heard from Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt Jr. You'll hear more from Joe in just a second, but
number one,
let's start off with Cliff Kingsbury and the Commanders offense, which stuck with the run game in a major, major way on Sunday against Tampa. That was despite the fact that it wasn't really working at all. Their longest rush of the day on Sunday was actually a 12-yard pass to Austin Eckler. The pass just happened to be a lateral, and thus it counted as a rush. Yeah, it was that kind of day. But that commitment to the run game is no accident, and it's something that Cliff Kingsbury has learned this year from none other than the head coach that employs it.
It's helped me having a defensive head coach, I can tell you that much, because he lets it be known we need to run the football at times that I would maybe in my previous life be airing it out. But we're going to do whatever it takes to win, and we have good backs, and we've had a great scheme throughout the year. We faced some good fronts. I mean, those two guys inside there are as good as anybody we played against all year at Tampa, and the linebackers are tremendous players. So it was a challenge. Todd Bowles is one of the best defensive minds in the league and has been for a long time. So overall, it's a challenge, and we just kept plugging away at it, and Jaden made some plays with his feet that helped us out. But I really, having DQ and just him mentoring me in a way, if you will, just about sticking to the run game, how it affects the defense, you know, seeing it from that perspective has been good for me.
I love how open this staff is to learning from each other. I think they're all going to be better coaches when and if they leave here. And again, I'm not suggesting this merely just for Cliff. I'm not suggesting that Cliff is leaving anytime soon. He might, but I would actually be more surprised if he left than I would if he stays. But I even think of someone like Anthony Lynn, who's been in the NFL for, what, 30 years at this point, coaching for most of that time. I'm sure he'll be a better coach in his next stop if he has a next stop. I'm sure DQ would just love to keep him around as long as Anthony will stay. But there are guys on this staff that have learned from each other. I'm sure that there are things that Cliff has taught Dan. Dan's actually mentioned at times this year. He'll bounce stuff off of Cliff and really, you know, wind up using his perspective as someone who, while he did not succeed as a head coach, has sat in the chair, did have some success as a head coach. He has something to offer. And so I just appreciate that a lot, that Cliff, a guy born in the air raid, played for it, coached it, is like, this defensive head coach might have a point here on some of this running the ball stuff in terms of managing the game writ large. And obviously it worked to perfection on Sunday.
Number two.
Now, they also got tremendous help, not just from Jaden and his feet, but Jaden and his arm and some of the guys that caught balls on Sunday. Tiami Brown, chief amongst them, absolute breakout game for the Commanders' number two wide receiver. What did Cliff see from number two?
Yeah, they've all stepped up when number's been called, and Diami is a guy who, when we got here, I had known about him from North Carolina. We obviously looked at him when I was at Arizona, and just the, I guess the attitude and the approach really has gotten more businesslike and more professional throughout this season, and it's paying off. I mean, he's showing up over and over and over, always been able to run, always been able to, you know, be really good with the ball in his hands, but his route technique and fundamental things like that are really improving, and it's a credit to him and the way he's approached this season. And so to have a game like that in that type of environment was really cool to see, that hard work paying off.
I love that little tidbit from Cliff that Diami's professionalism, approach, all that stuff has gotten better, because Diami's always been a guy, as far as I know, that's worked pretty hard. Like, I don't think work ethic was ever a huge issue with Diami. But just because you're willing to work hard doesn't mean that you're working smart or that you're doing the things that you need to do. Like, you can go work really hard in the weight room on something that's like, I'm going to go do a bunch of bicep curls and like, I'll have sick biceps and I can flex on people and I worked really hard. But does that make you a better football player? Like, no. I'm not saying that was a specific example to Diami. I have no idea what Diami was doing in the weight room beyond the stuff that he put on YouTube. But like, clearly, I think he's learned better habits as this season has gone on. He's applied them, and the results have kind of speaking for themselves. He's continued to just get better and better as this year has gone on, and I have no doubt that they will try to bring him back next year. Do they want him as their number two receiver? Probably not. I think they'd love to upgrade there. But if Diami's a 3/4, like kind of your first backup outside wide receiver, like that is a really, really valuable piece that you can give 40, 50 snaps a game to. Someone that you can trust if you're one of your number one guys goes down to fill that role. And that has been huge for them as he stepped up since Noah Brown went down, of course, there with that really scary injury that we found out about later in the Tennessee game that we learned about after the bye. Of course, that was not all to the passing game on Sunday and the explosive passing game specifically. They had a huge chunk on that first drive to Terry McLaurin. I think it was actually their longest play of the game, certainly their longest air yards play of the game, a 35-yarder. And I think that's something that we need to watch for on Sunday, too. Taking some shots early. What are the advantages to doing or to throwing the ball deep early in a game? Here's Cliff.
More so, I think, getting Terry the ball. He's a guy you see the sideline erupts. Like, he gets going. I just got to continue to find ways to get him touches early. But that was a tremendous throw and catch, and definitely gave us some confidence. But when he's involved early, we've been a lot better on offense.
100% agree. And I actually agree, not just with, hey, deep shots are great, but like, get Terry the ball early. There's an energy to the game and kind of a heightened sense of the defense of like, oh crap, he's going to have one of those days, that opens stuff up for other people as well. If you're a D coordinator, you have to pay attention. If he can just slink off to the side and not really be a factor, like, that's not ever going to work for this offense. He is their best player, not named Jaden Daniels, and they have got to get him the ball. Of course, part of that is on Cliff. Part of that is on, well, Jaden Daniels, who has continued to just read the field at a really high level, which has been noticed by his OC.
That was something that I thought jumped dramatically from his junior to senior year at LSU. And that was the thing that blew me away the most, was his progression in the pocket. I thought junior year was okay, but he'd get out and use his legs a lot more. And that second year, he was progressing through, getting to the third, fourth, finding his check down. And that's something that's just, you know, he uses the virtual reality stuff constantly. And I think that really has helped him just hang in that pocket and nail those reads and go through it like he does. But that's for a young guy to stand in there and do what he does and get to those reads has been as good as I've ever seen from a young player.
And the improvement, like, he started off doing it better than I think we thought he would coming out of LSU. He improved that much in the spring through his pre-draft process. And then obviously when he got in camp, by the time week one, like, he's still running around a lot week one, but by like week two, week three, you're like, what is this? This is way better than it was in college. And as Cliff said, senior year was way better than junior year. And now he has one of his toughest tests yet, because the Detroit Lions are waiting.
Number three.
And they are aggressive man coverage, a lot of blitzing, and they have a really good front. We'll get to the front in a second, but here is Cliff Kingsbury on Aaron Glenn, who might very well be a head coach here in about a month, and what he is doing with this Lions defense.
Yeah, he's going to get you. You got to just stay within yourself. I think sometimes you can become an emotional play caller, if you will, and like, oh, God, we got to make this up. And you just know, hey, with his scheme, there's going to be times that they win and they get you, and you're going to have some negative plays, but you're going to have a chance because they take risks to hit some big ones as well. And I think just staying in your pocket and not trying to force stuff, not getting out of your comfort zone and your rhythm because, you know, they've hit you on a few things. But he's done a tremendous job with that group, like I said. To have the injuries they've had and still play the level they're playing at right now has been really impressive.
And their front is probably the most banged up part of their defense, especially now that Alex Anzalone's back at the linebacker level. They've lost some guys there. Anzalone returned, but Aiden Hutchinson, McNeil, like their defensive front has been decimated. They brought in Za'Darius Smith, which helped a lot. But that front has actually played really well, despite Hutchinson not being there. Last but not least, from Kingsbury, what has he seen out of the Detroit front?
Yeah, they've done a tremendous job. I've been really impressed. I know some of the numbers don't look as good as they may want, but when you consider the injuries and the things that have happened to them, it's pretty amazing what they've done. And I thought their best performance was, you know, the last time they were out against Minnesota, they were dominant. Whoever they put in plays hard, they're disciplined, and they make you earn every inch. And so that's a credit to Aaron and Dan and the culture they have going there.
I think some of the teams that the Commanders blew out earlier this season, in part they blew them out because they just flat out played harder. You're not going to play harder than Detroit. You can play as hard as them, and the Commanders will. This game is going to be physical and violent. But the question is, can you ultimately, whether it's through scheme, whether it's through execution, come out on top? Because the physicality advantage is probably going to wind up being a wash. Speaking of big fellas up front, Vince Wilfork joins the show coming up at 6:30. Two-time Super Bowl champ talks about building a winning culture and more. But coming up next, we will hear from Joe Witt Jr. But first, let's get an update on the latest in the world of women's sports presented by Wawa Chicken. How you wanna at Wawa with customizable crispy or roasted chicken sandwiches. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. You heard from Cliff Kingsbury. Let's keep the pick six at six rolling and let you hear from Joe Witt Jr., the Commanders defensive coordinator, holding court today ahead of the game against the Lions. But that's not the only thing that's going on in Joe Witt Jr.'s world.
Number four.
Some big picture stuff for Witt to get started. Most specifically, what has he learned this year? Because this has been his first year as a defensive coordinator. There's a lot of reflecting that goes on as you get through the holidays and then you get to the playoffs. And it's like, wow, we're here. And certainly Joe's been reflecting all along, even though he wouldn't probably categorize it as reflecting. Like, he's self-scouting. He's self-studying. He's learning things about himself as a coordinator and as a play caller. So he was asked about how this evolution has been in year one.
That's a good question. I haven't really thought about it. As a coach, probably the big picture, you know, thing of it, of not necessarily looking so much at the back end, but looking at the whole picture, the big picture element. And when I say big picture, you know, the complementary aspect of it. Okay, how does the offense affect us? How does the special teams affect us defensively? And so I think that's, from big picture, from a play calling standpoint, early on in the season, I was trying to call plays perfectly. Okay, in this situation, you're supposed to do this. In this situation, and after the third game, going into the Arizona game, I said, "The hell with that." Okay, I'm going to call it the way I want to call it, and we started playing a hell of a lot better. Okay, and so, and that's the way I should have cut it loose at the beginning. But you know, I was, all right, it's second and seven plus. All right, they're here. This is the perfect, you know, supposed to be the perfect call here. No, just cut it loose, and that's what we've been doing ever since, and that's what I'm going to do.
I love that reflection from Joe, and I love that honesty from Joe. You gotta feel it out. Hey, yeah, I know, because the thing is, if you do the work to prepare, which he and every coach in the NFL does, but I especially think that he does, then your gut is going to probably lead you the right place because you're prepared. you don't have to then go back and reference the notes and be like, and you're sitting there with the pen on the sideline being like, which call do I pop up here? You got a feel for the game because you know, based off your preparation, what you're going to need in that moment. And then that feel gets better and better and better and better over time as you get to know your team and you have more experience doing it. And then someone else calls and is like, hey, would you like to be a head coach? Jets are interested in Joe Witt Jr. as at least head coach interview. Joe, thoughts on that?
Joe, just want to get this one out of the way first. Your name has come up with in connection to the Jets job as a request of permission. Did you interview, and how nice is it for you to be in that position where your name is mentioned after the 1 year as a DC?
I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm not going to try to dodge a question, but my whole focus is on Detroit. If I put any effort and energy into anything else, with this opportunity we have, I'll be cheating these men. So that's the only thing I'm concerned with right now. Yeah.
It's not nice. He doesn't want it. Joe, I cannot stress this enough. Don't even interview. The Jets are, that's not even like interviewing for an NFL job. It's interviewing for the circus. You're doing the right thing. Stay focused, not just because it's best for the Commanders, and I would love to see them win, see you win. You don't want that job. Don't worry about it.
Number five.
As for the men that he has now, they're getting ready to prepare or to play one hell of a group of men up in Detroit. And his matchup this week is one of the absolute hardest in football. He is going toe-to-toe with Ben Johnson, who has been the best offensive coordinator in football, arguably, over the last 2 years. I know people here have mixed feelings about him because of the head coaching search last year, but there is no denying this guy's brilliance as a head coach, as he coordinated a Detroit offense that averaged 33 points a game this season. So why is Johnson so good? Here's Witt.
They test your discipline. I think Ben does a really nice job of understanding coverages. He understands horizontal spacing as well as vertical spacing. He understands the responsibility of every player, and he's going to test the discipline of those players and of the coverage. And so you have to be where you're supposed to be and let your eyes be true. And if you don't, he's going to take advantage of it. So that's what makes them. And then they have really good players. You know, they have 9 and 26 have real speed. Okay, and so they're going to try to get matchups. They're going to try to do those things, and then you have 14. He's just a great receiver, inside, outside, can do it all. So they're good football team.
They're good all around, and they have a guy who triggers the offense that is probably still underrated. Jared Goff was a number one overall pick. He is supremely talented. Is he the best quarterback on the field Sunday? No. No, he's not. Jaden Daniels is better. I'd rather have Jaden, even at this point in their careers. But don't get it twisted. There are days where Jared Goff is like the best quarterback in the NFL. His hot streaks are white hot, and he is very good at exactly what they ask him to do. Joe asked about Goff and what makes him just so dangerous.
Well, like I said, I think what makes him effective is the understanding from the play caller, from Ben, of how to test people's discipline. You know, Goff is a talented man. He can throw from the pocket. He can throw deep inside and outside. He has all the tools, but their scheme and their eligibles makes them very difficult. And then he's a smart player.
Smart, laser rocket arm. No, hey, Ben's going to create this open guy. I just have to get the ball there. Sick. And he does a really good job of it. Of course, there's the other part of Detroit's offense, too. They will absolutely mash you in the run game and especially inside an area where Washington has struggled. They have some lighter personnel in there. So how do you deal with all that?
They know how to move people, and they do a nice job of, they can gap scheme, they can do the mid bounce, they have different types of runs that they can run inside, and they just lean on you. They'll go 30 plus runs on multiple games where they're just going to lean on you, and then they make you soft, because as soon as you start overplaying that, here comes the leak play, here comes this play, here comes the screen. So you just have to play discipline ball all the way through.
Hey, good afternoon, Coach.
How you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Great.
Great. Wonderful. I got to deal with that. Man, it's so tough because it feels like Johnson's just waiting for his shot. It's just body blow, body blow, body blow, body blow. Oh, you drop your hands. Bang. waylay right to the jaw. And here it is from a tight end leak where it looks like it's a play action. Oh, that tight end's just coming across, trying to find a linebacker. Whoop, run past the linebackers, and you're up the field. And Goff, because he has the arm strength to do this, can throw from outside the right hash back up the left numbers. Like, those throws aren't on the table for every quarterback in the NFL. They are on the table for Jared Goff. And so because they can attack all over, you know, Goff, that quick release and the strong arm, helpful in the screen game. They can get the ball out to their receivers quickly. And then guys like Penei Sewell can not just move people, but they can run to people and then move people. He is the best right tackle in the game. He might be the best offensive lineman in the game, and they use him as such. He is a weapon for them offensively, not just in the trick play category. So it is a tall task for Joe Witt this week. Is that me saying that the Commanders can't do it? No. If you're Joe Witt, are you scared? No. You're a competitor. You love moments like this. You love to see if you can rise to the challenge. But I, sitting in this chair, at this microphone, with a dose of reality, being an independent analyst of the situation, I understand just how gargantuan this task is for Washington because, I mean, even if you do nothing else other than look at the points per game rankings in the NFL, they average 33 a game, and they've had a week off to prepare. It's going to be a tall task for this defense on Sunday. Be very, very helpful if they could get a better version of Marshawn Lattimore.
Number six.
And that is where we close our pick six at six. Joe was asked about Marshawn Lattimore and kind of what happened on Sunday with him and Mike Evans and the bad day that Marshawn had at the office.
I mean, I felt that it might be a little bit difficult from the standpoint that, you know, he got one real day of fast practice, and we asked him to go out there and same thing we did ask him last time, to go out against AJ and go out there against Mike. But, you know, that comes with the territory of being who he is, okay? And, you know, when you go out there and you fight on the outside lanes, you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. And I have full confidence that he's going to win because he's getting the reps now every day, and he's going to knock all that rust off. So it wasn't the performance that any of us wanted, all right? But I have full confidence in the young man that he's going to get it done.
To me, Marshawn Lattimore looked rusty. He looked like a guy whose timing was off, who didn't quite trust his technique because it felt a little foreign to him. A week's worth of reps will go a long way in fixing that, and a good Marshawn Lattimore performance will go a long way to a Commanders victory on Sunday. That's our pick six at six here on the Hoffman Show. Tomorrow, you'll hear more from Dan Quinn as we close out the week, although tomorrow's only Thursday because the game's on Saturday and everything's moved up today, and that leaves me very confused with our weekly schedule. But it did leave some time for some extra fun things, like a conversation with two-time Super Bowl champion Vince Wilfork. Vince, next on the Hoffman Show. Every once in a while, you get a PR pitch in your inbox that makes you go, hell yeah, I want to talk about food and football with Vince Wilfork. And so the two-time Super Bowl champion is with us now to celebrate game day foodies and help tackle occasional heartburn so fans can get back to their beloved bites. And he's with us on behalf of Tums, who has teamed up with DraftKings to launch the Tums Fantasy Foodball Pool. The free-to-play online game is the first of its kind, offering a free shot at a share of $40,000 in cash prizes beginning during playoffs season and ending big game weekend. The campaign will include four popularity pools where fans will draft their ideal plate for numerous different food themes. They got spicy food, they got sweet food, they even got tailgate food and New Orleans based food, of course, because the Super Bowl is down there in New Orleans this year. Vince, appreciate your time, sir. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Hoffman Show.
Well, thanks for having me. How's everything going?
Hey, man, we're a show that talks about football in Washington, D.C. Things are very, very good right now, thanks to the Commanders. And yeah. I'm so excited to talk to you about, you know, building a winning culture, which has been kind of the goal of the year. And by accident, they've won 13 games and are headed to the divisional round of the playoffs. So when you think back to those early days for what Bill was trying to build with you guys in New England and some of those early like culture building moments, what does it take to get a franchise on the right track and build something that is similar to what Washington has been able to build this year?
Well, first is accountability. You know, being able to have a group of guys that's not afraid to tell each other what we need to do to accomplish this one goal. You know, and you have to have everybody think on the same mindset of what are we here to accomplish. And my biggest thing were always placing people around a winning culture, what it takes to win, you know. And a lot of times you see a lot of people don't know what it's like to win, because a lot of people go to colleges that don't win a lot. So you have to teach them the traits of winning. And the more people that you can get around that can teach winning and have the attitude about winning, and the more leadership you have, I think the more successful you will be. And last but not least, you know, it's the brotherhood. You know, we have to be able to all play together as one. It's not nobody that's, you know, selfish, just worrying about themselves. You know, football is a team sport. So everybody has to always be on the same page and work towards the same goal. And if something screws up, we all screwed up. It's not just you. We're not going to point fingers. But how can we minimize the mistakes and minimize bad football? And I think a lot of that is locker room driven. You know, the head coach is only there to give you, you know, the plays, but we have to be able to execute it. So the more guys you have in the locker room that can be leaders and can hold each other accountable, because at the end of the day, this is our team, the successful you would be. So that's a winning culture. You know, it starts with the locker room, and it starts with a group of guys believing in each other and putting the team first, and being able to execute at a high level all together.
I mean, it's so funny you use that word brotherhood, because that has been the exact term that they've all used this year around that locker room. And I look at a team like Washington compared to, say, a team like Green Bay that just lost. And obviously the Packers had a great season. They're a great team. But they were the youngest roster in the league. And how impactful do you think guys like, or can you maybe explain to those of us that haven't been in an NFL locker room as players, the impact that a guy like Bobby Wagner can have, the choices that Washington made to bring in veteran leadership and not just go full young team like maybe the Packers made that choice to do?
Well, that is huge, because you have to understand he's been part of a winning culture, you know, in throughout his career. So a lot of guys and a lot of the guys that he plays with watched him play, watch him win Super Bowl, watch him be with a great defense and a great team. So they looked up to him. So automatic, when he's on your team, the first thing you think about is what he's been a part of. So when he speaks, you know it's coming from experience, and it's coming from a place where they executed at a high level and they won. And he can tell them about the brotherhood that they played with. But if anybody sees how, you know, certain teams play, especially Seattle with the Legion of Boom back in those days, you could tell there was a brotherhood. You know, they played together. They had fun playing, and it showed. So to have somebody in your locker room and on your roster that's been through that, and these young guys already looked up, they probably was in high school, they probably was in college, understanding who this guy is, and now he's my teammate. It's easy for me to listen to somebody like that. I can remember being drafted by New England Patriots, where when I come there, I remember the Willie McGinnis. You know, I know the Teddy Bruschi, the Rodney Harrison, the Richard Seymour, Tywan, all these guys, Tom Brady and Corey Dillon. I knew all these guys because I grew up watching. Like, I'm like, I know these guys. I followed their career, you know, and the leadership, Mike Vrabel, like the leaderships that these guys came with, I already understood what type of player that I wanted to be. Just by what type of players that was already there. So having that as a coach, to be able to have a guy like Bobby Wagner, I mean, it speaks volume to that team. And then not only that, you know, the coach that they have, Coach Quinn, I mean, he's been there. He was in Seattle, then he went to, you know, the Cowboys, and then, you know, he had his little one stint as a head coach, didn't work out. He found who himself back again and came back, and now he's in Washington. Like, he went down the rings, and then he went down this road where he did some self, you know, evaluation of becoming a better head coach and a better person. And now he got a great young quarterback. He got a great young team. They're in Washington, and they're pretty exciting to see. So I love watching them play, because you can just see the brotherhood and the excitement and how much in the culture, how much they play for one another. And you can go a long ways being like that.
Vince Wilfork, 2-time Super Bowl champ with us here on the Hoffman Show. That young quarterback – pretty good, Jaden Daniels, and not just what he's doing with his arms, with his legs, but he's a part of that brotherhood, the humility he has and in that locker room for sure. But what's it like being even a defensive player, knowing that you have a dude like that? Like, you play with the ultimate, that guy will figure it out guy in Tom. So Jaden, obviously, very different stylistically, but there's a belief being in that locker room, Vince, and talking to those guys. Like, if I had a dollar for every time I had a guy tell me this year, if we got five, we got a chance, I'd have a lot more dollars. So what's it like being in a locker room where that quarterback gives you that chance and there's a belief amongst the 53 because of that?
Well, it gives you everything, because if I have faith in my players around me, it allows me to play fast and allows me to play hard. It allows me to do so many different things where I don't have to worry about what I'm going to get out of my teammate. And have a quarterback like that, especially at that position, that's the key. Is, you know, when you have a leader and they're at that position, and it's easy to play, you know, but it's, you know, when you don't have that leadership quality at that position and they're young, so it's like, okay, well, how are we going to win? We need to figure out ways to help. How can we do this? But to come in the way he came in, and just lighten it up, I mean, it's a win-win. So it's easy for a young team to look at their leader in their quarterback and basically ride with him. It's like, we have him. We know we have a chance that can hurt him in the air and on the ground. So you get guys wanting to play more and harder for a guy like that, because you still have to understand he's a young quarterback, so he's going to need help at times. But when you have it young, it's a special thing. So I'm very happy with the success that they're having. I'm very happy with the success he's having as a young quarterback. And, you know, it's a lot need to be said from the coaching there, you know, just the development and understanding that draft pick and coming in and being successful right away. It's a beautiful sight to see. So I'm excited for him. I'm looking to see how far Washington goes. Regardless of how you slice it, I think this year was a very successful year for them. I think they bring a lot of excitement back to Washington. I think a lot of fans are excited about this team going forward. And that's all you need. You know, in this game, if you have a quarterback at that position and you nail it, you have a chance to win. And I think they nailed it. So now they can look in other places to help him along the way, because that's it. That position is figured out. We don't have to worry about that. Let's put weapons around him. Let's beef up our team and our roster and bring in people that we know can help in other places to get us over to the next level. So I'm excited to see what they're going to be in the future. And I can't wait.
Vince Wilfork, two-time Super Bowl champ, is with us here on the Hoffman Show. As we said, he's with us on behalf of Tums and the Fantasy Foodball Pool. And one of the categories, Vince, in this pool that people can vote on online is tailgate food. And now you get to go tailgate. You're retired. I'm curious, though, you know, that's the fans' pregame food. What was a Vince Wilfork pregame meal back in your playing days?
But pregame, my pregame was Saturday, the day before the game, because game day I didn't really eat. You know, that was just one of those things. I ate, and I wanted to be hungry on the field. So, but the night before, I ate everything. But my go to was always wings. I was a wings guy, a wings and burger guy.
Okay.
I really wasn't a big pasta guy or a pizza guy. I was that in high school, but in college and all that stuff, it was burgers and wings the day before. And of course, you know, to top it off with some sweets with, like, my desserts, cookies and brownies and ice cream towards the end of the night. So I was pretty full for 2 days. So I didn't need to eat on game day. I was pretty locked and loaded the day before a game, ready to go. So that's how I handled my pregame, and that's what I wanted to eat before I got going the night before a game.
Now, in the modern, like, you know, last 5 years, 10 years especially, every team's got a nutritionist. Like, it's a very different thing. Did you ever, like, have a nutritionist be like, no, man, you got to get some more carbs, you got to do this, you got to do that? You just basically were like, look, man, it's working for me. I'm on a Hall of Fame track. Leave me alone.
I did. And that's exactly what happened. So probably the last 5 years of my career, a nutritionist came along and said, you know, it's not healthy to do this and that and that. And I'm like, okay, I'll change some things up. But I was still stuck like, listen, this is what I've done my whole life. This is what I've done for my career. This is what I'm going to do. But I wasn't afraid to eat anything if I had to, like, you know, back into my career. But those nutritionists came and screwed it up. I tell you that, man. They wanted to tell you what to eat and all that stuff. But it worked for me, you know. A lot of people can't do that. A lot of people can't, they can't go that long with basically fasting and before, like, they can't do that because your body works at a certain level. So everybody, each his own. And I was one of those guys where it never bothered me to be on an empty stomach going into a game. And I don't care if it was a 1 o'clock game or 8 o'clock game. It never bothered me.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it never bothered me.
Interesting. I would have guessed if it was an 8 o'clock game, there'd at least be a breakfast or something.
Mental toughness.
Hey, it's all sports are is just a mix of like scheme and psychology, and the psychology is quite important. So tell me more about this this fantasy football pool. How do people vote? What's the ultimate end game here? I see a shot at a share of $40,000. So how do folks get in on that?
Right. First, you can go to DraftKings.com/Tom's Football. And it's four things, right? You had a tailgating that's finished, that's already finished. Now we're in the spicy. And then after the spicy, we're going to go to sweets. And then we're going to finish it up in New Orleans style cuisine, because that's where the Super Bowl is this year. And you're basically going in. So the more points you get, the more you got a shot, right? So I encourage guys, for one, don't forget, because the more you play, the more points you get, you know, so don't forget that. And it just have fun with it. It's a thing between, you know, football and food. And the common denominator is heartburn, right? So that's where Tums come in handy, because we want to enjoy our food on football Sundays or whenever football is played. We want to enjoy our food, but we got to be able to have that Tums right next to us so we can make sure we can continue to have our good time with food and football. So that's why our Tums come up with.
Yeah, with all the close games the Commanders have played this year, some heartburn perhaps.
Yeah, heartburn happened, right? So I'm pretty sure they should have a whole box of them.
last thing, do you have a favorite New Orleans staple? I love going down there. The food down there is so good. It's so amazing. Do you have like a favorite etouffee, gumbo, po' boys, favorite spot down there? Like, what's your go-to?
I like all of that stuff, but I'm a boudin guy. But I eat all
okay.
My wife is Louisiana, so I eat all that good stuff. But a lot of people don't understand. They just go down for certain stuff. But all that etouffee, the catfish coubillon, boudin, you name it, gator, you name it. Hey, all that good stuff. But you can't go wrong with New Orleans-style cuisine, because they are some of the fantastic foodies. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll be a fun week for you down there. Enjoy it, man. And Vince, really appreciate the time here on the Hoffman Show.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, buddy.
Thanks again to Vince Wilfork for joining us. Really great chat with him. Food, football, and it was kind of funny because we talked about that. Actually, hold on. Linnell, for some reason, is still here. I'm going to bring you in for a second because
you had Vince Wilfork on the show.
Yeah, that's amazing. We had Vince Wilfork. They reached out the folks at DraftKings and Tums.
He's got a Tums spot.
they're doing like a, they're calling it the fantasy food ball. Thing. And my question for you, Linnell, is did you listen to the show yesterday for Competition Wednesday?
No. Anthony, was he in, though?
He was here yesterday, which is why we did it yesterday, because today is actually Wednesday,
right.
And even though it kind of worked out because the Commanders competition day was yesterday, kind of, actually, they probably did it today.
We're adjusting with the schedule.
Everything's
like
weird.
Washington.
The point is, everything's weird. But I recorded with Wilfork in the morning, and he's here on behalf of Tums, and then I had to eat these ridiculously spicy wings during the show as punishment for not picking games correctly.
Okay.
My guy Tony is working on the full video right now because some of the wing eating happened in commercial breaks. But
Tony Squares,
yeah, follow him if you like sports. Let me tell you, if there's a hot sauce that says Ninja Napalm on it, if there's napalm in the
name, I'm about to say,
it's gonna be hot.
Yeah,
I was hurting.
That's tough. I hate hot stuff. Seriously.
Okay, that's good to know. Put that on the wheel of mediocre punishment for Linnell in the future. Anyway, whatever the hell you're still doing here, you get to do it because we're done talking in 10 seconds. Studio's all yours. Metal Chris, thank you for your work. I will see everybody tomorrow back here on the Team 980. Oh, man.